I'd like to remind all participants this conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. You may begin.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. Welcome to the IGO-INGO-PDP Working Week call on Wednesday, 12th of June, 2013. On the call today, we have Chuck Goh, Volkan Klingmeister, David Maher, Kieran Malin-Charaville, Drew Lauter, Osvaldo Novoa, Christopher Raffi, Thomas Rickett, Greg Shatton, Claudia McMaster-Tamarit, and Mason Cole. We have apologies from Guylaine Fournet. And from staff, we have Barry Kopp, Brian Peck, Erica Randall, and myself, Julia Charvelin. May I remind all participants to please state your names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you, Thomas.
Thank you very much, Julia, and welcome everybody to this working group call. My name is Thomas Rickert, and I'm chairing this working group. And before we start our discussion on hopefully applying finishing touches to the draft report that we have in front of us, I would like to go on the record saying again that Barry and Brian in particular have done a tremendous job in preparing this document, and even more for having managed multiple comments that all of you thankfully made, and they have actually managed to amalgamate those comments, reflect all of them or most of them. There are only a few left in an updated version of the document, and we will hopefully be able to discuss the remaining comments and suggestions during today's call and then have a document ready for publication. I would like to say also that in terms of procedure, what we will do is we will hopefully achieve a status of the document that everybody is fine to publish. At the end of our call or at the end of our work on that, I will ask you whether you want to take another look at the document prior to its publication or whether you are happy with us, i.e. me and or primarily Barry, Brian and myself, applying the finishing touches and then publishing the document. I should alert you of the fact that even if we agree that the document should be published straight away, we will take a little detour because and that's usual practice with ICANN, but I'm going to mention it nonetheless for transparency reasons. It's going to be quickly reviewed by legal, by general counsel, to ensure that there are no statements in there that would open ICANN to liability. I hope that I haven't misrepresented this. Otherwise, I would like Brian or Barry to jump in and clarify. Also, I would like to bring to your attention that most of you will have heard or read that already, that the ICANN board, or I should say the new GTLD committee, has responded to the GAC advice on IOC and RCRC names. And you will have read that. I will nonetheless quickly read out those couple of lines to you to bring everybody up to full speed on that. The reason why I'm mentioning this to you today is because Bruce Tonkin has sent a note to the GNSO Council list clarifying a couple of points on that, and I have reverted to him promising that I would bring this to our group's attention. Now, just to refresh your memory, the GAC advice was, the GAC advises the ICANN board to amend the provisions in the new GTLD registry agreement pertaining to the IOC-RCRC names to confirm that the protections will be made permanent prior to the delegation of any new GTLDs. The board response is, the new GTLD program committee accepts the GAC advice. The proposed final version of the registry agreement posted for public comment on 29th April 2013 includes protection for an indefinite duration for IOC-RCRC names. Specification 5 of this version of the registry agreement includes a list of names in brackets provided by the IOC and RCRC movement that shall be withheld from registration or allocated to registry operator at the second level within the TLD. The protection was added pursuant to a new GTLD program committee resolution to maintain these protections until such time as policy is adopted that may require further action. 204.11.26 NG03 for those who want to read that in depth. The resolution recognized the GNSO initiation of an expedited PDP until such time as the GNSO approves recommendations in the PDP and the board adopts them. The NGPC's resolution protecting IOC RCRC names will remain in place. Should the GNSO submit any recommendations on this topic, the NGPC will confer with the GAC prior to taking any action or any such recommendations. And then Bruce added, I think the key message here is that it is possible for the GNSO to adopt a policy that offers an alternative to a particular implementation of the new GTLD program, including the IOC, RCRC names, and the trademark clearinghouse. The policy recommendation would then go through the normal community process where advisory committees can provide advice to the board prior to accepting a recommendation, and the board can refer such advice to the GNSO for review. If members of the GNSO community feel strongly that a particular implementation is wrong or could be significantly improved, then the GNSO Council should consider how to efficiently conduct policy process to provide formal policy recommendations in that area. I guess that's important for us to know as we move along with our work. And with that, I would like to conclude my introductory remarks and move directly into the document. And I would like Barry, who is the master of controlling the document, to move the document to the first comment, which is a little bit hard to read, so I will need to go through another window on my machine.
Hi, Thomas. This is Barry. So we're starting off on page 10, the section for top-level protections. We're going to go with an easy one here, I believe. Greg Shetton had stated basically should this language be stated in past tense, and if nobody disagrees with that, then we'll accept those and move on. But the changes are just verb changes from the first paragraph into the second paragraph. With respect to top-level protections.
Are there any objections to make that change? Okay, if not, let's move to the next item.
Okay, the next item is on page 11. There's a statement in here. I think this is a conclusion for top-level protections. It should be noted that IGO names and acronyms are not word marks as such. And Greg had a comment that what does this mean and disagrees with the statement. So it seems like it would be a good topic for the working group to discuss.
So, Greg, would you like to kick off our discussion on that by giving us some more background on that?
Sure. I mean, my thinking was twofold. First, they can function as service marks, as word marks. Secondly, that under Article 6 TER, they're considered to be, I think, the functional equivalent of word marks and are treated as such in member countries of the Paris Convention. I was really not quite sure where this was coming from. If the question was whether there were registrations or what the intent, or the meaning of the statement was. It was just it stuck out to me as I gave this a kind of final careful read.
Well, let me take. Let me try to provide a little bit of background. I guess that the reason for us having included this was that it is not entirely clear or defined in the applicant guidebook how broad the protection and what exact marks enjoy that that protection. And I guess that, you know, maybe you have more information on what exact names would be protected, but I guess that, you know, it was the intention to highlight that you know, there is not necessarily a protection for every designation.
Well, I think, you know, this is coming right after the statement that a holder of a word mark that is specifically protected by statute or treaty can avail itself of the PDDRP, and I think this is also the language that's in the Trademark Clearinghouse as an alternative avenue into the TMCH, other than having a national or regional type trademark registration. So it seems like this is setting up perhaps an argument that IGOs can't avail themselves of the PDDRP, even if they are, you know, if they are, even if they're created by treaty and their name is part of that treaty, and if they're also protected under 6TER. It just seems to be, you know, where it's placed here, not necessarily relevant, unless this is, you know, a legal conclusion that we're willing to endorse. It's stated as a flat conclusion, and I just don't see any support for it. And I don't see, you know, what, you know, either kind of what it's doing here, or if it, you know, is here, how we came to that conclusion. And certainly IGO names, you know, in some cases they are, you know, registered as trademarks, and in other cases they're certainly, you know, functioning as such. So it just, this is, I can't see any reason why this is right.
With a clarification such as, it should be noted that IGO names and acronyms are not necessarily protected at work as word marks. Would that clarify your address your concern?
Well, again, I don't see the basis for that. I mean, if some companies, you know, some IGOs may seek protection for registration. I haven't heard of one being turned down because it's an IGO. And I would, you know, obviously, there's some countries where if you don't have a registration, you don't have a mark under that, you know, national, you know, system. But, you know, there are plenty of others where that is not the case. So, you know, and I don't know what protected as a word mark means, you know, if we're not talking about registration or Article 6 TER, what are we talking about? And if we are, then I think it's wrong.
Well, I guess that this is just to highlight that, you know, that when you look at the Trademark Clearinghouse eligibility criteria, that, you know, the first one is a registered mark, then you have the common law marks, and then you have the designations protected by statute or treaty, and I guess that we wanted to highlight that these don't necessarily fall under the first category. They might fall under the third, i.e. protection by statute or treaty, but they don't necessarily fall under the first.
The first being what? Holding a national registration? I mean, that's just a question of whether an IGO has chosen to avail itself of such protection or not. And many haven't, because they believe, I think, that 6TER you know, provides them with the functional equivalent of that without the need to have a registration program.
Yes, certainly. Where word marks are in place, they could go through the first alternative. But, you know, after having discussed the reasons for your concerns, is there any alternative language that you could come up with to satisfy your or address your concern?
I would strike the sentence.
Thomas, this is Brian Peck from MyCan staff.
Brian, please go ahead.
Yes, sorry. Just to let you know, the genesis of this statement, it was indeed some comments or edits provided by David Roach Turner, who I'm not sure if he's on the call or not. I don't believe he is. So I think, you know, an alternative would be is in the view of IGOs, you could include this statement. I think part of the question or part of the debate, if you will, is indeed what is the concept of word marks and whether it can be interpreted broadly or, you know, very limited in scope in terms of a registered trademark. And I think that's part of the reason why we have this kind of discussion over that. So perhaps if we can clarify that in the view of, it should be noted that in the view of IGOs, their names and acronyms are not word marks as such. Would that alleviate, Greg, your concern?
I wish we had David on the call because
there are a number of
IGOs that have, in fact, registered their marks. And furthermore, if we take this view, and then that would mean that IGOs, unless they have trademark registration, and one wonders how they could get trademark registrations if their marks aren't word marks, seems perverse. Then that would mean that they couldn't avail themselves of the statute or treaty entrance into the trademark clearinghouse, which I think would be a shock to a number of IGOs. Maybe not WIPO.
I just saw that David is trying to enter into the chat, the Adobe Connect. So perhaps if he's hopefully online, we can talk with him.
Yeah, I see his name has appeared here. So.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. Yes, move to Helen in the meantime.
My apologies for the lateness. I just joined the call indeed.
Oh, David, you're on.
David, great.
Why don't let David speak first before I do? Mine may be irrelevant.
Yes. I wasn't aware that he was joining so quickly. So, David, we're discussing comment number 6 by Greg, and he asked about asked for the reason for the sentence. It should be noted that IGO names and acronyms are not word marks as such. And this was something that we took from one of your earlier interventions. So maybe you could elaborate on that a little bit.
Yes, certainly. Well, it's simply to make the point that IGO names and acronyms are indeed not word marks. They're protected. Well, at least in our view, they're protected identifiers. By virtue of the fact that they are covered under a treaty, and there's a process for the identification of names and acronyms that's provided for example, under the Paris Convention, which we've discussed on a number of occasions, and that provides a mechanism for IGOs to identify names and acronyms under that treaty. And identified names and acronyms under that treaty are then communicated to national signatories under the Paris Convention, who then have obligations as a result of that to protect those names and acronyms, and there's a variety of ways in which that's done. But the net effect of that protection is that the identifiers themselves are not word marks in the sense that a trademark would be if it would be registered as a word mark. The right that is obtained by the IGO is in effect a preclusive right in that it precludes the registration of the protected name or acronym as a trademark in certain circumstances. So it's a negative right, I suppose, in that sense. So I think that there is a degree of uncertainty about whether or not IGO names and acronyms would or could or the circumstances in which they would be able to be included in the trademark clearinghouse for that reason, and also whether IGOs would be able to access the URS for that reason as well, because both of those mechanisms includes a requirement for word marks. For the reasons just explained, it's not clear, at least not to me, that IGO names and acronyms would be word marks, which is why I think it's useful to include that clarification here. We shouldn't assume that either access to either mechanism is covered on that basis. So that's the purpose of this suggested comment.
Thanks very much, David. Let me move to Alan and then get back to Greg.
Thank you. May I suggest that we are not going to settle differences between intellectual property lawyers on this call, and that we use words here. If some people feel it's not applicable to all, others say it's important to put it in, then use weasel words saying it should be noted that IGO names and acronyms may or may not be considered word marks depending on the particular circumstances.
That's helpful. Thank you very much, Alan. But let me ask Greg first whether David's explanations have clarified this to a certain extent.
Well, I understand the view. I'm not sure that it's an absolute legal conclusion, and I was actually going to suggest language very much like Alan suggested.
Okay.
Leaving it open that they may or may not be word marks, and you know the question of whether you know a 6-TER listing, you know, makes it a word mark or such, you know, is and whether I think there's a number of open issues here, and I agree with David that certainly by no means settled, and it may end up precluding TMCH participation if indeed that was the, you know, the conclusion that was reached that it was not equivalent. So I think the kind of making it an issue but an open one is, I think, the way to go.
Okay. Now, if you look at the left-hand side of your screen, you find a proposed language in the notes section. And unless I hear otherwise, I would suggest that we include that wording in the report, which reads, it should be noted that the IGO names and acronyms may or may not be considered word marks as such. Okay, hearing no objection to that, I'd like to move to the next comment. Sorry, if you could.
This is Barry. So continuing on page 12, this is also with regards to some Greg comments. Listed in paragraphs 2 and 3.
Thomas?
Tim?
Yeah, I just want to say on Greg's comments, since my name is mentioned in there, that in our comment we were trying to point out that the Paris Convention provides a process rather than automatic protection. But in view of the fact that the IGO protection for names has been accepted by GAC and others, we don't have any problem with that.
Thanks for this. Okay, are there any comments on the comment made by Greg on this section? Alan, I'm not sure whether this is an old hand or a new hand.
Sorry, it's an old hand. As soon as I get back to my computer, I'll turn it off.
Okay. Kieran, please.
Hi. I just had a quick comment, and I'm sorry I didn't catch this earlier, but referring to it as word marks instead of words, is that necessary? Because some of the statutes that we refer to in relation to IOC and Red Cross in particular that I'm recalling protect them not as marks but as words, and so I wonder how this might affect those statutes and that reading. Thanks.
So your suggestion is just to make sure that
I understood. To take out marks and just say words that are specifically protected by statute or treaty.
Okay, good.
Because in the event that they're not protected as marks, word marks, then it would be helpful to remove the word marks, in my opinion. Thank you.
Thomas, we would agree with that.
Thanks, Kieran and Jim. I have Greg next.
Well, if we're talking about the trademark clearinghouse and the use of the word marks rather than marks, I think this gets back to the issue we were discussing before, and I'm kind of, you know, frantically trying to find the, you know, trademark clearinghouse eligibility language, but I think it has to be a mark and not just a word.
Greg, this is Kieran. Can I respond to that? That's not true. You can be eligible for the Trademark Clearinghouse without it being a registered mark if the word is protected by statute or treaty. So the word mark is superfluous here.
Okay, so the proposed language is to leave out the word marks and to add the sentence as inserted by Greg.
Well, I'm looking at the website for the Trademark Clearinghouse, and it refers to marks protected by statute or treaty.
I guarantee you that it has been clarified that words protected by treaty and statute that are not necessarily a registered trademark.
Well, obviously they're not. It doesn't have to be a registered trademark. We understand that. Otherwise, it would be superfluous to have the second prong.
Well, referring to it as a mark, though, is unnecessary if the word is protected in statute and treaty and those words can be entered into the Trademark Clearinghouse using the statute and treaty. That doesn't necessarily require it to be a mark.
Okay, getting back to Ellen's suggestion to find words to communicate the issue, can we talk about designations instead of using words or word marks?
I mean, if there is something the Clearinghouse has put out that's clarified this, the guideline document on their system refers only to marks protected by statute or treaty. Keeps using the word mark over and over again. So I don't think that's correct.
Nonetheless, can we settle this this discussion by using the word designations instead of word or word mark?
I think designations works, Thomas.
Thanks, Jim. Any opposition to that?
I just don't know the basis for that because that's just not what the Trademark Clearinghouse guidelines say. And that indeed goes back to the issue that David was pointing out earlier, that if these are not marks, they're clearly words, we know that, but if they're not marks, then they may not be eligible for the TMCH, even if they are protected by statute or treaty.
Tomas, it's Alan. Can I get in?
Please.
Yeah, we're not creating rights here by stating what we think the Trademark Clearinghouse selects. By using a more general term, such as designations, we're not conferring any rights. We're simply saying by designation meaning whatever it is that the Trademark Clearinghouse allows in. You know, we're not granting rights here. We're not changing the Trademark Clearinghouse by putting something in a report. We're just trying to be as general as possible without having to delve into the exact definitions that the Trademark Clearinghouse is or is not using right now. Thank you.
Thank you for that, Alan. I mean, certainly it might be the easiest way to just copy the exact words of the Trademark Clearinghouse. I'm looking at the table of contents of the Trademark Clearinghouse guidelines, at least in the heading speak of marks protected by statute or treaty. So, but I would suggest that we don't even take the language from the Trademark Clearinghouse guidelines because those guidelines have been prepared by Deloitte and IBM, possibly. But we take the wording from the latest version of the applicant guidebook and copy that into this document. And I guess if we have that, then at least there should be nobody should be misguided by us construing things in a certain direction. And with that, we should move to the...
Thomas, this is Chuck. Sorry, I'm having connectivity problems, so I can't raise my hand at the moment.
Chuck, please go ahead.
Another way of dealing with this is to put a footnote and noting that we'll investigate the issue with regard to the proper wording, noting that there is some disagreement in the working group in terms of the use of the words or word marks, et cetera. I don't know if that's helpful or not, but I don't think it's worth spending too much time on this, but that would be another way of noting the issue. I don't think this has to be – that could be clarified later, and this thing could still go out for public comment without really losing anything.
But would you be happy with just copying the exact wording from the applicant guidebook?
Well, I don't think it's me that you need to make happy. We have, you know, maybe – is Greg happy with that? He seems to be the one that's still concerned about this. So if he's happy with that, I am.
I am happy with that. I think any time we go to primary sources, that avoids, you know, construing. So, works
great
for me.
So, let's try to make more people happy during this call and move to the next item, and that is the added sentence, word marks that have successfully been protected in litigation or dispute resolution proceedings are also eligible. I would suggest that, Greg, in the light of us trying to take language from the source, we will ensure that this is exactly what the applicant guidebook says, and if not, we would change that to meet exactly the wording of the AGB. And unless I hear from anybody of you, we can then move to the next comment, which is comment number 9. And that is related to the sentence in the case of...
Thomas, this is Barry. Hold on. So that I'm clear on page 12, both comments have been addressed, and then to strike the suggested sentence, given the action that we have on the previous page?
Well, with respect to comments number... 7 and 8, we would need to double-check with the wording of the applicant guidebook and make sure that we use exactly the wording that's used in there. And then
okay,
we can remove the comments.
And then, and so we've addressed comment number 9 as well, then?
Well, this is the comment that
all the same.
That I just started to read out. Well, the sentence reads, in the case of IGOs and INGOs, which are in general not trademark holders, any such benefits of the trademark clearinghouse would typically not apply. That is certainly not language in the from the applicant guidebook. Greg commented, not true to the extent they are specifically protected by statute or treaty. I guess that the statement, if I may construe it, it is true because it speaks of in general, and it does not per se state that there is no such protection. Greg, would you nonetheless like to suggest alternative language to clarify? Or?
Yeah, what I would suggest is in the second clause, instead of saying which are in general not mark holders, to say to the extent they are not considered mark holders.
Well, if they apply for a mark in a jurisdiction, they are mark holders, and then it wouldn't be a question of considering them to be mark holders.
But I think we're also considering marks protected by statute or treaty, even if not by registration, being the second prong under the trademark clearinghouse. Is just another variation of the issue, you know, discussed before, that if these are not marks at all, and if it's marks and not designations that are eligible for the TMCH under the statute or treaty prong, then even if they are protected by statute or treaty, they're not getting into the trademark clearinghouse. If they are word marks, or if somehow designations or words protected by statute or treaty is the filter, then they do get into the trademark clearinghouse. So, in which case the sentence is wrong. So, there's kind of, you know, two issues which are probably not settled. One is whether, or maybe, and maybe three issues. One is whether IGO and INGO names are word marks for purposes at least of the statute or treaty issue. Whether if they're not word marks, that means they're ineligible for the trademark clearinghouse, or whether there's some broader definition of designations or words that might be used by the trademark clearinghouse. And third, the issue of whether it's protected by statute or treaty doesn't apply to 6 ter of the Paris Convention, because it's a process and not a protection, if that's, you know, if that analysis were to hold. Separately, you've got, you know, treaties that have established the names. So if, you know, the establishing treaty of a IGO were to establish the name, that presumably would be a treaty, you know, besides the 6 ter issue, that would solve that issue, but does still leaves open the issue of whether it's a word mark or not, and whether word marks are the only kinds of words or designations that can be protected by statute or treaty and thus get into the trademark clearinghouse.
Okay, Greg, I get that the words in general have been intentionally included to ensure not to make a phrase that's a catch-all for all scenarios. Because as I said earlier, IGOs might have applied for trademarks, which would make them eligible for the DMCH under the first alternative, or they might enjoy protection by statute or treaty, which might allow them in under the third alternative. I guess that the purpose of this sentence is not to cover each and every scenario, but just to explain that in certain scenarios they might be left without the possibility for entering into the TMCH.
I guess I just think the sentence is too conclusive in that regard. I think I'd say, you know, to the extent not mark holders, any benefits would typically not apply if they're not mark holders.
Thomas?
Jim, please go ahead.
Did this particular wording come from the IGOs, or how did it come into the paper?
Darren, Brian, can you enlighten us on
that?
This
is Brian from ICANN staff. This was an edit provided by the IGOs.
For my personal liking, this sentence doesn't seem to be too conclusive. It still leaves, you know, it's just to display that the organizations might be left without the possibility of entering into the trademark clearinghouse. But let's try find a set of words that would satisfy everybody. Can we state there are cases where IGOs and INGOs do not have the possibility of achieving an entry in the trademark clearinghouse?
I just don't think we know that's the case yet. It really depends on what protected by statute or treaty means and what mark means in the trademark clearinghouse filter.
Okay, Chuck.
Just a suggestion, Thomas. I'm not a trademark attorney, thankfully, but would it work to just say replace would typically not apply with might not apply? That's less conclusive, I think.
Greg.
Well, I think if they are not mark holders, and if we're right that only marks get into the trademark clearinghouse, you know, marks don't have to be registered, marks protected by statute or treaty, then the last part of the statement is true. I mean, but I think we may still be better off with a bunch of maize rather than woods. So,
okay,
just maybe say may not apply. The benefits may not apply. So that to the extent not considered mark holders, any such benefits of the trademark clearinghouse may not apply?
I would be happy with that.
Frankly, I'd be fascinated to know what the trademark clearinghouse thinks they're going to do with all this. That's probably outside the scope of this working group, but it might be an interesting inquiry to make. And it may not be outside our scope.
Okay, if we say may not apply, is that something that everybody could live with? Or I should better say that makes everybody happy. I guess that's the purpose of this call, to make everybody happy. Okay, hearing no objection, we should say may not apply. And I'm sure that Barry and Brian have taken note of that, and that would allow us to go to the next item. Which is comment number 10.
Yes, this is on page 13. The original statement is, however, views on the degree of harm suffered by organizations varied in the working group deliberations. Essentially, two views emerged. I won't restate the two views, and Greg had posted a comment that these aren't necessarily opposites.
So the first view is to require each organization seeking protections to provide evidence of harm against it. View number two, harm does exist and resources consumed to mitigate the harm divert funds away from serving the public global interests. I would agree that these don't necessarily oppose. I guess the question is rather how we smoothen the language. And what we could say is that the views presented to the group included the following two, and then present those two. Greg?
Well, I think that the issue is that, you know, in either view could be could include the idea that resources consumed to mitigate the harm divert funds away from serving the global public interest. So I think the question is whether the views relate to whether harm should be presumed or required to be proven. The issue of the resources is, you know, could be as much part of view one once the harm is, you know, evidence of harm is provided.
Okay.
So I'm not sure why it's only part of view two.
Then we could say that the second, we could present the second view as harm does exist and does not need to be proven beyond the information already offered to the working group. While you think about it, let me move to Chuck.
Well, just trying to help again. What if we introduce the two views this way? Essentially, two views that are not mutually exclusive emerged in the analysis of this issue. That certainly deals with the issue that they're not necessarily competing views. I don't know if that covers everything that Greg's concerned about, though.
Well, as far as I understand, Greg wanted to highlight the indeed lengthy discussion that we had whether further proof of harm or evidence of harm should be provided, and we basically had three views with respect to that, the first of which is that evidence of harm should be provided. The second view was that evidence of harm was sufficiently provided, or sufficient evidence of harm was provided to the working group. And the third view was that protections are granted by the legal basis that some working group participants based their request for protection on, and that this protection by treaty or other legal basis does not require further evidencing of harm. So we could, you know, to want to include all three in addition to the now second view, which would then be the fourth view, and have the extra remark that you made that these are not mutually exclusive. You know, if memory doesn't fail me, those are actually the various views that have been presented during our deliberations. Greg, not sure whether this is an old hand or a new hand.
Well, I'm wondering whether we should just say in either case, resources consumed to mitigate the harm divert funds away from serving the global public interest.
And then present the three variations that I just outlined?
I think so, yes. I was not quite trying to get my way through those three variations, but yes, I think so. I think the issue of how you get to harm and what the harm is are really two separate related issues.
Okay, thank you. We have a proposal from Mary in the chat. Although the purpose of requiring harm, she suggests, goes toward the fact that resources otherwise earmarked for an organization's public interest mission are diverted towards dealing with such harms, there were divergent views within the working group as to whether such harm needed to be first proved or if it could be presumed for each organization for which protection is given. That sounds very smooth and nice to me. So any comments on Mary's suggested wording, which I think encompasses everything that we've just discussed? So Mary's language works for Greg, and on top of that, I haven't heard or read any opposition to that. So let's please include Mary's suggested wording and put that where the two bullet points with the two views were. So that would allow us, Barry, to move to the next item, and thanks, Avi, for indicating your support with the suggestion. Now looking at comment number 12 on page 15, where Greg says that the last sentence is unclear, which reads, while being different from each other in many respects, the IRC and RCRC together may be differentiated from other INGOs on the basis of the unique legal protections they are afforded under the framework of international treaties and national laws in multiple jurisdictions, while IGOs have been differentiated from INGOs on the basis of the types of legal protections they are afforded. So, Greg, maybe you can explain a little bit why you think this is unclear.
I'm really looking more at the second clause, not wading back into the IOC-RCRC issue. But rather the IGO-INGO differentiation is really, I don't know if we need to have a more explanation than this, but at least for me, I was kind of having, you know, struggling with the idea that that IGOs necessarily have been differentiated from INGOs. I guess if we're talking about the treaties by which they're established, and Article 6 term, maybe that's sufficient, and maybe this is clear enough for this purpose. But you know, if that's what's intended, otherwise, I'm not sure where the conclusion comes from.
I guess it's just to reflect what we've been discussing, and I guess that we've been very clear in our discussions that we do want to have, or that we do see different legal bases for the four categories of organizations. Claudia, I see your hand up.
Hi, Thomas. This is Claudia. May I suggest that we delete the word together? I agree that with Greg that it's a bit unclear, and for me, the word together is really at the heart of the problem. It gives the impression, and I think that we'll agree, that we're treating all four organizations differently, and we don't need to reopen the reasons why they all have unique legal protections and unique situations. I think that the word together gives it the impression that we're looking at the IOC and the RRC as having similar or identical legal, and actually I should say identical legal protections, and I think that's not the case and something that we're moving away from. So I noticed that the word together has been added. I don't know from where, but I think that word in particular can give some confusion. Otherwise, I think it's the sentence is a bit long, yes, but important that people understand, okay, there are different bases in legal protection and different frameworks for all four of these organizations/categories.
Thanks, Claudia. So the suggestion is to delete the word together. It was my impression, though, that Greg had more difficulties with the second half of this statement. But let's hear from Avi.
Hi, Avi speaking. I actually think getting rid of the word together is probably a good idea. My recommendation is for the sentence as a whole, though. I think that it would be better as two sentences, and if the semicolon after jurisdictions was replaced with a period and the word while was eliminated, I think we'd have two sentences, each of which was understandable. The while made the second clause seem like, well, why is that while the first clause? But, so I would recommend that. Thanks.
Thanks, Avery. Let me try not to lose focus of what's happening in the, devote my attention to what's happening in the chat before I move to Greg, because Mary again has suggested language here. But there have been some edits to Mary's language, which makes it difficult for me now to read it out to you. Okay. While the IOC and RCRC may be distinguished from other INGOs on the basis of, and then moves on as in the text, it is possible also to distinguish IGOs from INGOs in general, since both types of organizations enjoy protections on different legal bases or bases. There is a discussion on what the plural of bases should be. So let me hear from Greg and Kieran, and maybe you can also indicate whether maybe Mary's suggested wording would do the trick. And this question also goes out to Avi. You know, maybe this is something that could resolve the issue. Greg, please.
At the risk of sounding namby-pamby, I'm happy with either kind of Avery's edit to what's in the document or to Mary's edit. I agree that the word together should be deleted. Thank you.
Thanks, Greg. Kieran?
Hi, I think I was the start of this controversy, the most recent version of this controversy of IOC and RCRC together or separate. And I just wanted to make one clarification after whatever that is.
Kieran, hold on a second. For those who are not speaking, can you please put your microphones on mute, please? Please mute your microphone. Kieran.
Okay, so I think there was some misunderstanding about the separation and where that was coming from. It's not so dependent on the details of what the law provides, but rather the qualification criteria that we came up with last year and the nature of that. IOC and RCRC, the qualification criteria, which was some has that legal protection or an intent to protect the marks or designation has a basis in international treaty or sui generis statute, is one category that refers to both the IOC and the RCRC. IGOs have something separate, and INGOs have something separate even still. I don't think that we need to be getting into separating them. I think it makes the document incredibly complicated, and it's going to be even more, ever more difficult. People can make arguments about the specific organizations all they want, but if we go back to what we were originally trying to do way back when we had that massive spreadsheet where we were discussing qualification criteria, there's no point in continuing to try to separate the IOC and RCRC for that reason. Thanks.
Thanks, Kieran. I'd like to just make reference to the note that Brian included in the covering letter to the latest version of the report, where I gave a little bit of history of our deliberation. So I guess that we have discussed and decided that we should separate the four, which I think can also be reflected in the wording. Claudia, please.
Hi, Thomas. This is actually to agree with you, your last sentence. That paragraph talks about the working group's deliberations. And even though I'm one of the few who had said we should have one criteria for all sets of four organizations, that is not ultimately what we decided to do. We decided to treat the IOC, the RCRC, the IGOs, and INGOs all four in different ways. I think that last sentence is really just meant to reflect the idea that the reason we've done that so far has been, at least for the majority of the group, is that there are some differences, and this is irrefutable in that sense, between all four organizations or categories. So they all have their own unique framework of legal protections that they might look towards and reasons that they might look towards to be asking for special protection. I would suggest that we be very careful to just be very, very, to write that sentence in the context of this paragraph and to keep it very general in the sense of these are four different organizations or categories, and they all have unique legal protections. If we start going beyond that, we are rewriting the entire paragraph. We're getting away from what we've been discussing over the last week, that we've made a choice to treat them all four separately. Thank you.
Thanks, Claudia. Ellen.
I support what Claudia just said. There's no doubt that some people in this group think that there are four different, and others believe we could group some of them together. The reality is we have not come to closure on that, and any statement we make, if we make a statement saying the IOC and the Red Cross, the RCRC, are working under the same legal basis and should be treated the same, you are just demanding that certain groups make a comment and call you out on this in the public comments. I don't see the merit in that. Thank you.
Thanks, Ellen. I guess that I see Kieran's hand up again, and Kieran, you also made some comments in the chat. I think that we should really focus on trying to find language that satisfies everybody's needs, because I think we will not be able to settle and answer this question so that everybody is happy, because if it were possible, then I guess we would have been able to achieve consensus in the last couple of months. So if I can please ask for language that might address everybody's concern in terms of presenting where we are and not with the intention of presenting a consensus position on whether to separate or whether there might be common qualification criteria, because I guess this is not the point where we should discuss this. Mary.
Thanks, Thomas, and I agree that we can probably move on, though I understand that the reasons why others may feel differently. I guess this is really one paragraph in a broader context, and it's not actually making the specific point that we're actually arguing about, but to the extent that there's a sense that some folks may misread or there's something missing, again, taking the broader context into consideration, I mean, there is reference in the previous sentence to four types of organizations. So it seems to me that we should keep it general, and people will read into it what they want to read into it, or not.
Thanks, Mary. Sorry, Mary, you hadn't yet finished, which I wasn't aware of. Please, can you repeat the last sentence you said?
I simply said, you know, the previous sentence to the one that we're discussing makes explicit reference to all four types of organizations. So I suggest we just leave it the way it is, keep it general, make the distinctions general, and people can read into it what they want or not as they will.
So your suggestion is to keep the wording as it is?
You mean for the purple sentence? No, I'm saying that whatever we do with the purple sentence, and I think we're looking at tightening and clarifying it, we just make the distinction pretty general, you know, between the IOC, RCRC, and INGOs, and between INGOs as a group and IGOs as a group, and leave it there.
Okay. Mary, before I move to Stefan, let me read out to you the another proposal that has been posted in the chat by Aubrey in the meantime, and that is, while being different from each other in many respects, the IOC and RCRC may be differentiated from other INGOs on the basis of the unique legal protection they are afforded under a framework of international treaties and national laws in multiple jurisdictions. IGOs have been differentiated from INGOs on the basis of the types of legal protections they are afforded. Is that something that the group can live with? And while you think about it, I'd like to hear Stefan's view, please.
Yes, thank you. Good morning, good evening. Well, I think without prejudice to the fact that indeed the IOC designations and the Red Crescent designations have been addressed together, or were addressed together in the early stages of the process, I think it is the case that, you know, the situations are quite distinct, and that, you know, the grounds for the protections under international law are also distinct. So from our point of view, you know, if the word, you know, together was withdrawn in order to avoid any, you know, implication that, you know, the protections are identical, I think, you know, it makes sense to take the word together out of there. I do want to make it just a short additional point, which is, you know, this paragraph is as well as, you know, the PDT attention, once again, you know, is focused on protections due to organizations, while, you know, the unique legal protections in regard to the Red Cross, Red Crescent, Red Crystal, and Red Lion and Sun names are not, you know, afforded to the organizations. They're afforded to the designations of, once again, you know, the emblems of protection of armed forces, medical services, and armed conflict, and of the and the distinctive signs of the organization. So there is there a difference. In a sense, that's not captured, for example, in this paragraph, you know, as we would like. But in any event, you know, to come back to the very first point, I think, you know, the fact, you know, there are four categories or four categories that are being examined, and if the word together is withdrawn, it's okay with us. Thank you.
Thanks, Stefan. Just a quick follow-up question. You have commented on the purple sentence. Have you been looking at the language that I just read out as proposed from by Aubrey? Is that something that you would be able to support?
Okay, you know, I'm sorry, I'm not sure I saw it, so I need to see it. I apologize. I will have a look.
Not to worry. It's in the on the left hand side in the Adobe in the notes section. You find paragraph 2AD, and it's below that. I guess we need to expedite our discussions a little bit because we only have a little less than an hour left. So I would suggest that we proceed on the basis of Avi's proposal. So this is your opportunity to object. Okay, so having heard or read no opposition to that, let's include Avi's suggestion, because I guess that captures the status of our discussions. This was the last proposal that was made, and Stefan, it's your hand again.
Yes. Please. Maybe we're looking at Avi's proposal on the left-hand side, which is numbered number two, right?
Yes. Exactly.
But I was, you know, to capture the point that I was making earlier, you know, maybe one possible way would be, you know, to refer to the unique legal protection that they, the organizations concerned, and their designations are afforded under a framework of international treaties. Because, you know...
Can you repeat that last bit, please?
It says maybe...
Every
text says may be differentiated from other INGOs on the basis of the unique legal protections that they are afforded under a framework of international treaties. And I think, to be more exact, at least with regard to the Red Cross, Red Crescent designations, one way might be to put on the basis of the unique legal protections that they... and their respective designations are afforded under a framework of international treaties and national laws.
Thank you for that, Stefan. I would be happy with that clarification, and should I not hear any opposition, then we should take that as adopted language. I see confirmation from Avi that she's accepting this edit as friendly, so to speak, and Claudia's signal of support is also visible in the
Thomas, we also support it.
That's great. Thank you very much, Jim. And let's move to the next comment. And I think we need to speed up a little bit.
Yes, Thomas, the next comment on page 18. This is a section within for the summary of the General Counsel's Office response to the research. And I think the reason why we've left this one as it is, there were several competing thoughts about how this should be worded, and we thought it as staff best to leave it up to the working group to create the final version here.
Okay. Thomas, this is Brian from ICANN staff.
Brian, please.
If I may just add, what we've done here is two things. One is to add some additional language. As Barry pointed out, there were some comments, one feeling that the original summary was too restrictive, others felt that it was fine. So you'll see in the redlined version, languages, additional language we pulled directly from the General Counsel's response. So we've tried to incorporate enough language where we feel, you know, it fairly summarizes or properly summarizes what the report is saying, and also to alleviate any concern that it might not be either too restrictive or non-restrictive enough. Again, we just pulled language straight from the report. The second main comment is we are suggesting, it's our view, that where it starts with nevertheless, we believe this is kind of commentary on the General Counsel's report, which is fine, but given that this section is simply a summary of the report only, that text that we're suggesting to be deleted should be more appropriate, either submitted as a public comment, you know, during the public forum period, and or if I believe this was submitted by Ricardo on behalf of the IGOs, that we insert this in, you know, there is a community input section of this report which allows the various parties to express their views that have been expressed during the course of the of the deliberations of the working group. So those are the two changes here. One is adding the additional language to try to alleviate concern that it's either too restrictive or non-restrictive in terms of the summary. The other is suggesting the deletion of this last part as more appropriate to be submitted as a public comment.
Thanks, Harry. very much, Brian. I guess this is very helpful. And in the light of these explanations and due to the fact that the language sort of has been stolen from the General Counsel's response as such, so it was not made up by ICANN staff to color the statement in one way or the other, are those who have provided comment on that section satisfied with this explanation, or do we still need to discuss and tweak a little bit? So can I ask particularly those who have commented whether they keep up their comment and require further changes? Hearing and reading none, we should deem this part of the report as accepted by everybody present in this call, so that allows us to move to the next item. And I'm scrolling down in my own document, but Barry, if you're quicker, please do jump in and let us know where we are in the document.
So the next section for review is section 4.4, paragraph 2, with respect to how our recommendations would apply to all GTLDs. What I've done here is just highlighted the second paragraph and in the comment box to the right, and I recommend that people use the Word document I sent out. I went ahead and cut and pasted the comments with respect to this topic over in the comment box. And there's also a link down at the bottom regarding from our wiki. So I think for the most part, the working group is in agreement that, you know, this paragraph does need to exist, but probably we need to enhance the second sentence to make it more clear as to what should be stated here.
And with that addition is, you know, we had an exchange of emails on that. So Avery, as one of the commenters on that, indicated that she would be happy with the language if we add a little bit from Chuck's note to it. And with that, yeah, Avery, you have the word, please.
Yeah, thank you. I don't have the exact words, I should, but the part of Chuck's note that I think would be worth adding has to do with his statement that per the definition of consensus policy, these would be incumbent on the current GTLDs. And so it's not actually a problem of if they are applicable to the new GTLDs, but in what way it will be applied. But I didn't actually write a sentence. But Chuck had one. Thanks.
Chuck did, and Chuck, certainly I don't want to put you on the spot, but please do raise your hand if you want to comment. I guess that the general idea is that certainly consensus policies, once they're adopted, are have to be followed by every signatory of ICANN accreditation contracts. The only question that remains is how these policies can be implemented, particularly in the light of existing registrations. Chuck, please.
Sure. Thanks. This is Chuck. Actually, Aubrey said it pretty well, I thought. That second sentence there talks about the fact that we haven't deliberated on how or through what mechanisms it would be implemented. I mean, we have mechanisms already. The consensus policy process is a mechanism for doing it, for establishing the policy. So actually, if we can kind of say what Aubrey just said, I think we would be fine. But we shouldn't imply that we don't know how to do this for existing TLDs. That's part of a PDP. That's what we're doing. There are mechanisms already to implement policy on existing TLDs. What we are going through in this process, even though we have not talked much about existing TLDs, if we make consensus policy recommendations, it will impact them. And this second sentence kind of implies like that's not the case. I don't think that was intended, but if we can capture the way Aubrey said it, I would be fine with that.
How can we capture it?
Well, let me look at it here, okay? Let's try it. Let me think live. This is Chuck again. What if we said today the working group has not deliberated how possible consensus policies would impact existing GTLDs. Does that work? And we may want to add a statement like Aubrey did. The fact is that if consensus policy is approved, it will be applied to existing TLDs as well as new GTLDs. So we probably need to say both.
Okay, before I move to Aubrey and Ellen, just my personal understanding was that we might just say something along the lines of, while consensus, you know, should the working group's recommendations ultimately become a consensus policy, the group has not yet deliberated on questions of how to implement these with existing TLDs beyond the fact that consensus policies have to be followed by all registry operators. Because I guess that's sort of what we're looking for, that, you know, we might provide special advice for incumbent TLDs. Ellen?
I would just change in the first sentence, the working group must consider how they should be implemented within the current GTLD environment, period. Stop it. That's implying we haven't done it yet, but we understand we need to. Hello?
I see a plus one for Ellen's suggestion. Any more views on that? Okay, so Ellen, seems like you have helped us out quite a bit on this one, so we'll tweak the language accordingly and move to the next item.
I'll send my bill tomorrow.
Well, if you're paid by the hour, I guess it can't be too expensive for these 30 seconds, right?
You haven't seen my hourly rate.
Okay. Let's take this offline. Okay, scrolling down again. And Barry, if you're ready to go before I am, please let us know where we need to be now.
This is Barry. So our next set of comments is with regard to in the second level section for our recommendation option number 9, which is on page 31.
So that's just a clarification. Any objections to including that clarification? Seeing no objection to that, I think we can leave it in. And looking at Barry and Brian, you know, as the authors of the document, should you have any concerns with adding or changing language, please do let us know. Okay, then let's move to the next item, and that's something, Brian, that you have edited.
Yes, thank you, Thomas. Brian Peck from ICANN staff. Similar to along the lines of the previous comment that we deleted regarding the summary of the General Counsel's report, again, I think this particular aspect of the comment is more appropriate for either public comment submission and or if necessary, we can add it to the section of community input at the appropriate place for IGOs. But don't believe it's appropriate here for the summary of this particular recommendation.
Thanks. I guess that's helpful and understood. So unless there are more comments on this one, we can move to the next item.
which the next item is recommendation option 11 regarding the exception procedure. And Aubrey had some comments on the list today, which I pasted in the comment box over to the right. And I believe her suggestion was supported by Chuck and Mary on the list.
And
okay,
Vulcan,
so how can...
That was
excuse me,
Chuck.
Chuck?
I just said Anne Wolfgang, I think, supported it on the list as well.
Yes, which is true. Okay, how do we best incorporate that? Here, I guess it's undisputed that, you know, the view should be accurately displayed and that such edit should go into the report. Avery?
Yeah. Just as I indicated, the request was just to add a sentence, which is there at the bottom of that note. Although, okay, and I better go look at it. There is a portion of the community that is strongly opposed to the creation of any exception process for name the reserve list. So it's exactly what was typed in there is my request for an additional sentence. You know, and it goes either before the last two or after the last two, and I don't really care where.
Okay, so I suggest for the sake of speeding things up, it goes before the last two sentences. And
but it looks they're kind of together.
Say that again, Ari.
I said because it looked like the two... question, the two last sentences went together. So that's why I was saying it's either before them or after them, because it shouldn't be in the middle of them.
Correct. And I guess we've done that. So thanks for that. Kieran, you're next.
Hi, I don't object to the inclusion of that, but I was just wondering how much of this report is presenting the options that we developed as a working group, and how much of it is space for us to put, you know, what people think one way or the other. I think it's starting to get more about, you know, presenting viewpoints, which I thought that's what the public comment would be for then.
Aubrey, would you like to offer an answer to that?
Yeah, sure, thanks. I was looking for a way to put my hand down and put my hand up. What we're also trying to describe is what discussions went on and where there were strong positions. And those positions do indicate options. And as we have an option here, at some point, the words from people, do we create special exception processes for reserve lists or do we not? At the moment, the group has differences of opinion on that. I'm not going to try and sort of say how big or little those differences are in terms of groupings that agree, but that is one of the things we need comments on because it's something we do not have unanimity on. Thanks.
Thanks, Aubrey. Chuck.
Thanks. And I think Aubrey said it pretty well. Bottom line, our goal isn't to use this document to present our individual views or our group views. That's true. But also, much of what's in this report is various people's opinions. And we've tried to word it in such a way that it is presented as such. So I think adding that sentence is fine because it is a view that was communicated in the report, and we're not pushing it, but it is an option.
Thanks, Chuck. Alan?
Yeah, I don't see the need for it. The preamble in 4.4 says this is a bunch of options. You can select some or not. Those who believe there should be no exceptions would not select 11. And their comment to in the public comment period can make it really clear that 11 is something they would do their somethingest to make sure it doesn't happen. But it's one of the many things that some people like and some people don't. I'm not sure why we need to put, in general, in all of them, we have not put why some people don't like this and will not select it. And I'm not sure why we need to include it here. It's just one of the options, which if you don't like, don't pick it.
Yes, and I, all your points are well taken, and I guess that sometimes viewpoints that are presented or positions that are or options that are presented are congruent with viewpoints. So I think we can't avoid to have viewpoints in such report. I guess this is to inform the community about the status of our deliberations. I guess that we should not include each and every individual view in this because we can't, otherwise the document would be very, very lengthy and hard to read. I guess what we need to do today is try to finalize this for publication. So, Alan, my question to you is, if you say it's not necessary, do you object having it in there? Because obviously it's something that Avi really wanted to have in there.
It's really going to cause other people to go back and say, but if that's there, then I want to put my 2 cents in other ones. I think it's a rationale for highlighting in bold or clearer words the preamble in 4.4. But that's my opinion. Well, I'm not going to veto anything. I don't have that.
I agree with Alan.
I don't have that right.
Thanks, Alan. I guess that, you know, if you don't object having it in there, and if nobody else does, and if nobody else takes this as an opportunity to also push for additional edits, then I suggest that we leave it in there, as we did with other language that was proposed to make other participants of the working group happy. But now let's move to Mary.
Yeah, you asked me a question. Let me answer. I do object. And just as the other comments that I think Brian suggested are best submitted as public comments, I think this is one of those too. I don't, however, have a veto. The group doesn't need my concurrence to go ahead with something with general consensus. So,
thanks for that clarification. I asked this follow-up question because you said you didn't need it, but nonetheless it wasn't clear whether you really objected against it. Mary, please.
Thanks, Thomas. I guess I would agree if Alan, if the sentence or any of these sentences specifically named people or groups, whether it be NCSG, ALAG, IPC, registries, and so forth. I mean, I think one reason that Avery suggested and I supported adding this, if you look at the whole matrix, as I said in the chat, there are various points in this table where we have things like this. There are some views that say this, some and certain views of the community say that. So, and I view this addition as along those lines, that to the extent that there were definitely very strong views within the community, we don't say who they are, that opposes it. If we've already put some in, then those of us that are watchful for certain views from our community, we can put those in. There's nothing to stop others from saying, well, in this other part, you know, we want to say some in the community feel the other way. This is just something that we are suggesting. And I don't want to open the floor and tell everybody now go back and look at that table and see where you want to put stuff in. I guess the point is, A, it was always open to people to do that because, B, the current language already has some of that. So either we take it all out or we allow folks to put general language like the type Avery is suggesting in today.
Thanks, Mary. And I guess that Greg, is it on that one?
Yeah, I'm following on this point. And, you know, as I consider this, I'm kind of increasingly uncomfortable having, you know, certain places where these viewpoints are expressed, but, you know, other places where they're not, and thinking perhaps about places where, you know, I did not, or I on behalf of IPC did not, you know, express some view of a portion of the community, you know, that should be reflected here. And, you know, I think that Kieran's semi-rhetorical question, you know, about what this document is supposed to do, you know, I would follow one of Mary's suggestions, not necessarily the one that she was endorsing, but which would be to scrub these kind of ad hoc, you know, position statements or exception statements out of here. Or, you know, give everybody another round to decide whether they want to have a position statement in here, too, because there are definitely those within the IPC, for instance, who've expressed the view that there really needs to be some sort of an exception process. and and believes or that there are other kind of commentary type issues here. So I think I might want to get rid of all the commentary personally.
Okay, now we've heard various views. I guess that I take Alan's last intervention as an encouragement to decide or suggest to the group that we leave the language as proposed in here. Alan said that the group doesn't necessarily have to concur with everything that he objects to, so I think that he will accept us including leaving it in there. Because, I guess that, we need to close this section and move to the next item, which I think is on page...
Oh, so where does that leave us? We're going to leave in the ones that got in the door, but we're not going to put any more in? Is that where
that
we stand?
That is what I suggested, yes.
Including or not including the latest suggestion by Avery?
My proposal was to leave the latest proposal in the document. Avery brought up this this point, and the language was not objected to first. And it was Alan who raised the point that he would prefer not to have it in there, but he said that the group doesn't necessarily have to agree with him. Alan, you are raising your hand again, so please.
Yeah, just if indeed there are other personal opinions that are saying, but some people don't agree on any of these options, I think they should all be scrubbed, and I think staff should look for those and highlight them for our review in their next review. Each of these are presenting options. If there was not someone opposing each of these options, they wouldn't be options anymore. They would have been decisions. So virtually every one of these has some opposition. Anyway, I'm putting down my hand, and I'll let you decide whichever way you'd like.
Yeah, I guess the difficulty is that, we will never get to agreement on all these points. I guess that when it comes to this point, the reason why I propose to leave it in there is not to open the door to include each and every viewpoint, but because these were variations to the original policy recommendation that I think the community should know about to be able to make an informed decision on what they think about the protection mechanisms. But as previously stated, we put out the report for public comment, and each and everybody of you can go to the public comment section and file a comment.
Thomas?
I have Chuck first, and then it's your turn, Jen.
Thanks, Thomas. And most of you probably saw my comments in the chat. I am really opposed to doing anything that delays us finalizing this report today on this call. So even though I think it's fine to have that sentence in there, if it's going to mean we take more time beyond this call, if we can't do any scrubbing that people are talking about on this call, then I guess I would take out the sentence because we need to get this thing out for public comment. I said that last week. It's not going to be perfect. We all have the opportunity to comment. Let's get this thing done and out for public comment. And otherwise, we're just going to keep dragging this thing on, and it's ridiculous.
Thanks, Chuck. Avery, just a practical question: Would you be okay with leaving out the language and filing it in the as a public comment?
No. I would not. I think at the very least we'd have to look for every instance of some members of the community, some members. For example, the last two sentences, this one would have to come out. So now, if we're going to say that they can't be added when people have been adding them all along, I think we have to scrub them or we have to let it in. So no, I would not be all right at all. Thank you.
Thanks, Avery. And you will remember that a couple of minutes ago I said that I would now leave the sentences proposed by Avery in for the reasons I gave you. I was looking for a practical solution to this by asking Avery whether she would approve to have it removed, and since she doesn't, I will stick to my original decision and proposal to the group that we will that we leave the edit in there. And for those of you who do object to that, they can state so in the public comment. In which case, I suggest that we move to the next comment. Barry, can you help me out?
So the next comment is on page 35 in regards to section 4.5 in regards to recommendation option 1. And I think that we've already discussed this, but we had highlighted it's about the whole separation of IOC from RCRC.
35.
So, Thomas, this is Brian Peck from ICANN staff.
Brian, please.
Thank you. I think it's the staff's view that this suggested edit be deleted. As Mary mentioned, we've talked about this, the separation issue before, and we understood that the previous language was somewhat unclear, and we tried to clarify that both in this recommendation option and also in the kind of explanatory note that has been placed in front of the matrices for the protection options, and that is, we understand that there are different views in the working group in terms of whether the criteria for the qualification criteria for the IOC and RCRC should be different or separated out, as highlighted by Ricardo's statements and positions. But we also think it's a fact that in terms of the protections that have been granted so far to both organizations, that indeed both the GAC and the ICANN board have recognized or agreed upon that the criteria for these two organizations are the same, basically the matrix of international treaty protection and multiple jurisdiction laws. And we try to reflect that here in this description of the recommended options, saying that, based on international and national legal protections as recognized by the GAC and ICANN board, and then in our note, as I said, that is in the place before the matrix of the protections, we say in the case where the RCRC and IOC are treated as the same listed together, this only reflects the view and action of the GAC and ICANN board to date and does not reflect the approach of the working group. So we hope we're trying to clarify the status of this particular issue in terms of what is a fact in terms of the protections extended so far by the ICANN board, but recognizing that there's a different point of view and that the working group has not necessarily accepted that, and hopefully that will clarify that. And as such, would recommend that this particular edit be deleted.
Any views from the group?
Thomas?
Jim?
Just wanted to agree with Brian.
Thanks for this. Any more views from the group? Okay, in which case we will delete the addition and move to the next item.
This is Barry. Believe it or not, that was the last one in terms of highlighted changes in this version of the document.
Which is great. So, we're done with that then, which is great, and thank you everybody for this constructive discussion. Staff will now prepare the latest or a new version of the document. My question to you is whether you want to take another look at it or whether we can send it to General Counsel for approval and then publish it. Chuck, please.
I recommend that we not take another look at it, that we trust staff to finalize what we agreed to today, that you do a quick General Counsel review to make sure there's no concerns on their part, and that we get this thing posted.
Thanks, Chuck. Ellen.
I've never heard this concept of submitting a draft report to General Counsel for their approval. What is this based on?
Ellen, hi, this is...
Brian, I just wanted to ask you to answer that question.
Sure. Thank you. Ellen, sorry, just to clarify, it's not to approve, it's more just to a quick check, a fact check to make sure that there are not any misstatements, especially in terms of for example, the Trademark Clearinghouse or other matters. So it's not a full-on review and approval, recognizing, as you say, that indeed this is a draft report from the working group. It's more of just a quick fact check and make sure there's nothing inaccurate or inappropriate in terms of ICANN positions.
Go ahead. If I may respond,
mm-hmm.
To not set precedents, I would say that any report before it goes out should be subject, and I presume this has already been happening, to staff review to make sure there are no inaccuracies of fact in it.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. That's fine. Mm-hmm. I would not identify General Counsel as being part of the PAT. They are staff.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And if staff is identifying errors in fact, thank you very much. That's the limit that I would put on this in any case.
Sure, and apologies for misunderstanding. It's not for approval at all. I mean, again, this recognizing that this is a report from the working group, and so it's not a matter of approval. It's a matter, as you say, it's part of staff just to make sure, there are no inaccuracies.
Well, I hope other staff also are given the opportunity to identify errors in fact, but that should be the limit of any perusal. And I would have liked the thought this has been happening in parallel with writing it, since we don't want a three-week delay now while someone reviews
them. It has been in parallel, and indeed, I mean, we've notified internally that we'd like to get this out by the end of this week, and so everyone is in recognition of that intention. So it's not going to be, please don't worry, there's not going to be a three-week review period, or even much longer or shorter than that as well.
Thank you, Alan and Brian, for your answer. I see David's hand up and then Stefan.
I just wanted to add to Chuck's remarks that I'm the representative of the Registry Stakeholder Group, and we fully support getting this initial report out as quickly as possible. Thanks.
Thanks very much. Thanks, David. Stefan?
Yes, Stefan Hankins with Quest for Clearing. I'm sorry, I think I may have missed the very beginning of the conversation, but I know that this report is, of course, of a very different nature to the one including recommendations and which had been issued by the IOC Red Cross Red Crescent antecedent working group, because it includes a wide variety of options that on very key issues. So I'm wondering a little bit, what is expected from this, except of course, outlining the challenges that were identified, discussed, and options table, what's going to happen with this. I'm sorry if, this has been already explained earlier on at the outset of the conversation. Thank you.
Thank you, Stefan. And let me try to answer your question in addition to the remarks that are being written in the chat in parallel. The usual procedure would be that the working group comes up with a set of recommendations, and then the working group expects more feedback on the recommendations from the public to take into consideration when or before before making their or issuing their final report and sending that on to the GNSO Council. In our case, you will remember that we sort of got stuck because the group was not able to come up with a set of recommendations that would be, that would reach consensus, or I should rather say rough consensus, because full consensus, I think, is out of the question. And we are now looking for the community to provide input and guidance that might facilitate our discussions as we move along. And maybe we get new ideas, new suggestions that helps the group to define a consensus position. But as Chuck rightly points out, the next steps are also described in the report, so I guess that's something that you could also take a look at. And I would be more than happy to discuss this further with you, Stefan, but I guess that for the sake of saving time, we should take this offline for the time being. Before I end this call, I have one remaining point that I would like to discuss with you, and that is the upcoming Durban meeting. And there has been a suggestion by ICANN staff that there could be a session on the work of this working group or on the subject that we're discussing. And if I may, I would like to ask Brian to provide us with a little bit of background information on that.
Okay. Thank you, Thomas. Brian from ICANN staff. It has been suggested that, similar to a session that was held in Beijing on policy versus implementation, we had a panel discussion of, you know, various views and perhaps, you know, looking, you know, kind of some brainstorming, if you will, on ways to move forward on the issue. It thought it might be useful to have a similar type of session in Durban, where we'd have a panel discussion. Of course, we'd, you know, be moderated, and to provide an opportunity for the different views to be expressed, but more importantly, and given the timing of this initial report, perhaps solicit or provide an additional opportunity for the community to provide some input or to provide perhaps even some, as Alan put in the chat here, some insights that would help us to move forward in the working group's deliberation. And so obviously, we want the working group involved in terms of, coming up with suggestions for particular panelists, the agenda, the discussion, and so forth. And so this is the thought of the ICANN staff in terms of planning such a session in Durban. So would it, if there's any initial comments or feedback on conducting such a session.
Thanks very much, Brian. And before I open this up for the group to respond to, I would just like to present you with my personal views on that, because I have discussed this very question with Barry and Brian a couple of days back when they asked me whether I thought it was a good idea. And in fact, I do think it is a good idea. You will remember that the GAC has questioned the fact that the GNSO Council has set up this working group and conduct the PDP in the first place. Also, I guess there is a lot of confusion about why we are doing this, what we are doing, why this takes so long, why this is such a heated debate on a matter that is perceived by some as a minute implementation detail. So I guess this would give us the opportunity to shed some light on what we're doing and provide input to the community or to the attendees in Durban on what we're doing, and maybe that will also stimulate more input from the community. Certainly, since this is such a controversial matter, the composition of the panel needs to be carefully considered. I think it also needs to be carefully considered who is going to moderate the sessions. It should not be biased towards one or the other direction. But I guess if this is done in a careful manner and well prepared, I guess it would be very beneficial to each and every group represented in this working group and the community as such. Chuck, you wanted to comment.
Thanks, Thomas. Real briefly, I just want to say it looks like the reply period will still have probably roughly a week to go after Beijing or maybe overlapping with Beijing a little bit. So I think that's a good reason to have a session just because of that, in case anybody from the community has questions about this, they will still have opportunity to reply in the comment period.
Thanks, Chuck. Alan.
When Chuck was just referring to the reply period, are we talking about the reply period for the public comment for this report?
Yes.
I thought we have an established process or rule of thumb that we do not count the times at an ICANN meeting or nearby as counting against the time limit. If we do that, there's going to be some strong objections.
Either way, Alan, my point still stands.
No, I wasn't arguing with your point. The issue you raised, however, is we need to settle on how long this public comment is going to be open, and we haven't had that discussion yet. So if someone is assuming it's already a fait accompli, I would suggest that we do discuss this. Thank you.
Agree.
Alan, can we please leave this procedural aspect out for the moment, and because I'd like to hear more views on whether you think such session is a good idea and whether you have any ideas as to the composition of such panel.
Tomas, I wasn't demanding it be talked about now. I was just pointing it out.
Sure. Thanks. Okay, I'm not seeing any hands in the Adobe. Also, apart from some signs of support that we saw, there was no objection against having such session. I would like to encourage you to please think about how this session could be set up and maybe share your thoughts with the whole group on the list or approach Barry, Brian, or myself off list. And with this, I guess I can close this meeting. So we're going to have the next meeting. Brian, please. Sorry, Barry, please.
Sorry to interrupt. So if we're on target to deploy the report for public comment this week, should we have a meeting next week? I understand that our intent was to try to continue deliberations on the recommendation options. So anyway, the general question is, do we have a meeting next week or do we take a break and start 2 weeks from now?
A good point. You know, I took the agenda as having already printed that decision, but I'd like to hear your views then on whether you think we should wait for... Yeah, Chuck.
Sorry for jumping in so much, but if we continue deliberations without receiving the public comment, seeing what people are going to say, I think we're going to be criticized, and rightfully so.
Okay, then... we're going to have a break, as Avi stated in the chat. Greg.
I think, you know, the one issue that's out there that we haven't, you know, maybe there are two issues, but I think one we really do have to wait for the public comments to come back on. The one thing that we could benefit from, but I think we could also benefit from at least a one-week break, is discussing, you know, applicability to existing GTLDs. Or not so much applicability, but perhaps how it gets applied to new GTLDs, and probably the biggest issue there would be the clawback question. Other than that, I agree 100%. You know, that we really should enter somewhat of a quiet period here as the report gets published and the comment period ensues. You know, at least until we start seeing comments, we can discuss those in. As they come in, not necessarily waiting for the end of the comment period and the reply period, but I think at least a one-week break, but potentially considering, you know, the issue, you know, that we have kind of not fully taken care of, or at least, you know, the one that we've kind of least taken care of, which is that this is for all GTLD, not just the new one. Thank you.
And this is Barry. May I recommend that we meet on the 26th. Certainly, we can talk about existing GTLDs, but more importantly, that'll give Brian and I time to put together a draft presentation and a format for our session in Durban. I think it'd be wise for the working group to come together to talk about that so that we can prepare for that week.
That sounds like an excellent suggestion, Barry. And I have another hand up from Ellen. I guess Greg's hand is an old hand, so Ellen, please.
Just a question. When are we deciding how long the comment period is then? Or is the chair going to tell us and we can disagree if we'd like on the email list?
With the comment period, I guess we have foreseen a 21 plus 21.
No, we have a minimum of 21 plus 21.
Barry and Brian, I guess you've sketched out the date already, haven't you?
Alan, is your question how those dates actually fall, given, as you say, the general rule of the practice of not counting the time of an ICANN international meeting, or are you asking to the group to consider whether you want to extend it beyond 21 days?
I don't know when it's going to be issued, so I don't know when the 21 days is.
Mm.
So I'd at least like to know what the period is before I give my approval. I don't know about anyone else cares, but I certainly do. I represent a group that has a great deal of difficulty putting together responses, and this is one we're going to want to comment on. And, you know, if we find out that the 21 days, you know, of the original comment period, you know, covers, you know, half of it is in travel or something like that, or yeah, I don't know what the dates are, so I don't know when you're hypothesizing you're going to have this ready for issuing or not. So I'd like to see the dates.
Okay. Our goal is... Go ahead.
I was just saying that we did not count the Durban days into the 21. So I took that for granted that we would add additional days for the Durban meeting. But we can certainly follow up on that by email. But Brian, you wanted to add to this?
No, I was just going to say Alan was asking when we would publish. Our goal is to publish it, by Friday, and that's our intention.
Well, given the substance of this report, given that the difficulty that this group has had in reaching. In trying to narrow down the many, many options we're presenting, I think we have to give the community more than 21 days to come up with responses. I know this is an expedited PDP and we want to get answers, but if we really believe that regardless of how you spell insightful, we're going to get insightful comments, I think we have to give the community opportunity and time to do that. Some comments written by one person, that's fine. Some groups have to come up with comments that they, you know, that is a more of a bottom-up process. And I point out we're issuing this report in English only.
Yes. Nonetheless, if you ask me as chair, I had not planned to recommend to the group that we had a longer public comment period than 21 plus 21. I think in the light of the expectations that are in the community with respect to the outcome of our work, with respect to the fact that this has been called a model or a case study PDP by both the board as well as the GAC, we should not go beyond what's required as a minimum. And on top of that, since we have been discussing this so controversially for more than half a year now in this group and even longer in the predecessing drafting team, I think that various groups in the GNSO and outside the GNSO that do wish to comment are already familiar with the subject matter and that they have been updated by their representatives in this working group. So I would suggest that we don't go beyond the 21 plus 21 plus the days of Durban. I have to admit the battery of my laptop just died, so I can't see whether there are any hands in the Adobe. So please do make yourself heard if you want to comment on this.
There are no hands.
No hands. Thank you very much for that. And with this, I would suggest that we end the talk.
Sorry.
Please.
Just
please
on this last issue that you've been talking, I looked at the calendar, sorry speaking. I looked at the calendar. If this gets really quickly, the 3-week or 21-day would basically end during the travel week before Durban, if I counted my weeks right, which is possible. And then you've got Durban, where I don't know if your 3-week response period runs through Durban or starts again after it. So I recommend that you kind of work those things out and put them on the list so then we can dither about them a bit more. Thanks.
But don't we need to have clarity on the length of the public comment period prior to or coincidentally with the publication of the report? And if that were the case, can we get this settled before Friday? We will, you know, take this as a rhetorical question. So we will work on a on the dates. We will send a suggestion to the list, and we will hear your feedback on that.
And Thomas, this is Chuck, and that can be done in the next 2 days before it's posted. And if we
yes.
want to respond to that, it's our obligation then to respond. Very quickly, in other words, by early on Friday, so that that is resolved before posting.
And we will do it exactly that way. And with this, I would like to end this call, unless there are, you know, which I can't see, there are more comments, but we're already past the top of the hour. Thank you, everybody, for your contributions. Again, thank you for your constructive input and your willingness to compromise on the language. That's been very much appreciated. And hopefully we'll get a lot of very constructive comments from the community during the public comment period that will help us with our work. And with this, I'd like to end the meeting. Have a great day. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thanks, Thomas.
Thanks, Thomas.